My name is Tian Parker Dominguez. I am your moderator for this session. I am the co-chair of the Improving Pregnancy Outcomes Committee of the Maternal and Child Health Section, and I'm a social work faculty at the University of Southern California. I welcome you here to our session this morning on Improving Pregnancy Outcomes, Findings from the Community and Child Health Network Study. And there are no financial interests that any of the presenters have to disclose, and I have no financial interest to disclose, although I do want to take this opportunity to recognize my former dissertation chair, mentor, colleague, and friend, Chris Dunkelschetter, who I am very honored to be able to moderate this session with, because I very much respect her work and the work of all of the panelists, and so I'm very honored to be here this morning. We are going to start with Dr. Robin Lanzi. Dr. Sharon Ramey was unable to join us at the conference this year, and I think it was an issue with the hurricane, right? With this, yeah. So she was unable to join us, and so Dr. Lanzi has graciously agreed to step in and take her place this morning. I wanted to just also recognize the organizers of this session, Judith Katzberg, Janine Lewis, and Ki Chan, who are the other co-chairs for the Improving Pregnancy Outcomes Committee. And we have attendance sheets that I'd like to pass around and just ask you to complete so that we have a count of how many people attended the session. And once it gets to the back, if you could just leave it on the back there so people that come in. Okay, we'd also like you to hold all of your questions to the end. We have organized the session so that there is a fair amount of time at the end for discussion. So if you could just jot down the questions that you have, we would appreciate it. Thank you. Okay, Dr. Robin Lanzi is a faculty member in the Department of Health Behavior in the School of Public Health at the University of Alabama at Birmingham, with expertise in adolescent parenting, child development and maltreatment, maternal depression, and early intervention. She has been a PI or a co-PI on 3 NICHD multi-site longitudinal studies, 2 on child neglect among adolescent mothers, and the other, which is the focus of today's session, the Community Child Health Network Study. Please welcome Dr. Lanzi.
Thank you so much. Well, I'm pleased to be here. And before I begin, I just wanted to take 1 second and let all of you who are here representing CCHN stand up, because there are a number of you here that aren't part of the panel but are part of the network, and I want to recognize you as well. And we have some wonderful pictures that Chris has provided for us that we'll show at the end as well. Let me see. Okay. So no presenter disclosures. And again, thanks to Sharon Ramey. She's the one that originally put this presentation together. So I hope I do her justice in that. All right, so for our presentation, what we'd like to do is essentially give you an overview of what CCHN is, how we came to be, and the CCHN guiding framework that we developed as part of our network, and then how we see what the emerging issues are for our network and our findings and sort of the next steps. And then we'll lay the foundation for Chris to discuss, Dunkelschetter to discuss some of the stress and resilience measures and findings that we've been working on for many years now, it feels. But wonderful to finally get the data set and the findings that we can talk about. And Bowen will talk about the recruitment and retention issues that we've had, and then closing with some really innovative aspect to our study with the biomarkers work that she's done with cortisol levels, salivary. Okay, so setting the stage for the Community Child Health Network. In 2001 to 2002, which is when we started as to begin as a network. And at the time, the findings to date discuss preconception period as being an ideal time for us to look at ways to improve reproductive health outcomes and the well-being of children. And that what happens during interpregnancy intervals, between the time when you have one birth to the next pregnancy, is likely to exert both biological as well as psychosocial effects on the parents and the children in a family. And then third, looking at ways that high-quality, culturally adapted prenatal care can improve health promotion behaviors and knowledge of high-risk women. but alone has not reduced major health disparities. And then looking at it larger, looking at neighbor and community effects documented as associated with pregnancy and child development outcomes. And then a fifth component, how maternal depression, stress, and anxiety all relate it to planning, timing, and preparedness for pregnancy and parenting. So the Community Child Network, in terms of how it originated in 2002, NICHD and the National Institutes of Nursing Research as part of the Health Disparities Strategic Plan of NIH. So they had this, and it came, really evolved from the thought that traditional approaches to framing maternal and child health disparity research have not included the knowledge and perspectives of community residents who are most affected by the research variables and outcomes of interest. So what they wanted to do was then to do something about that, and in response, NIH called for a community-university partnership to develop innovative research design using cross-disciplinary and community perspectives in that. And what CCHN decided to do, the Community Child Health Network, is we responded and voted to implement principles of community-based participatory research to guide all aspects of our research in the design of it, the conduct of it, the analysis of it, the dissemination of it, the interpretation, and ways that we can work together. And just to briefly talk about the CBPR principles and the way that we have adopted it and implemented it throughout is that there's complete sharing and openness in all activities and decision making. So it's not just the community one way discussing it and the academics one way discussing it, but that there's this partnership in the development, the evolution of all aspects of it. And, you know, put your money behind it too kind of thought, that there's the sharing of the finances, the sharing of the decision making, the sharing of being on committees, and that there needs to be an equal balance in that as well, that there's not just sort of a one person representing, but that they're, and you see that in many different ways of the composition of our committees. We have a community committee that deals with a lot of the community issues and ensures that we are representing the community in all aspects, and Chris will probably talk about this, but that our measures are vetted through the community committee. We have a SPANS translation committee that originally also looked at the measures to ensure that it was translating both backwards and forwards in terms of translation. And again, the joint participation in all data collection, analysis, and presentation of research findings, which is, I think, a very unique and a wonderful aspect to what we're doing, because one may think that the findings mean a particular thing, and then, though, if you discuss it from all aspects of it, you get a greater, more richer understanding of particularly what the data do mean and what it's telling us. And we think it's the richer for it. So we designed it as a multi-phase interdisciplinary. There's many different disciplines within our network and academic and community partner network, with the overarching goal of developing innovative approaches to advance the understanding of entrenched maternal and child health disparities. And we really want to seek to understand more about how the communities, families, and individuals engage in the multi-level context that influence pregnancy, prenatal programming, and child health and development. And I'll share a little bit in a minute about the different conceptual frameworks, our guiding conceptual framework, and then how that relates to our hypotheses. Again, recognizing we are a multi-site network, so we have three urban sites, the Baltimore site, the Washington, D.C. site, which is urban, and then the Los Angeles site that's urban. Our North Carolina site that's rural, and then we have a Lake County. We say Chicago. It really wasn't in Chicago. It's more the Lake County area, but to help identify the location of it, which is suburban. And we have people here representing all of those, wonderfully nodding their heads. Plus, we have the Data Coordinating Analysis Center at Penn State, and again, NICHD and NINR are NIH partners. To put it into context in terms of innovations of our study, what we think is really innovative and unique and what we can bring to bear in looking at health disparities, and particularly related to maternal and child health, being the first to measure allostatic load, which is an index of cumulative wear and tear due to stress in women during childbearing years. And then second, having multiple measures of stress, and that being both perceived stress and environmental stressors, and we find that there's not so much research out there where it's having all these different multiple measures of stress, and Chris will talk at length about that. And resilience, as well as perceived racism and discrimination. And we have some wonderful, I think, measures on that as well. Depression, anxiety, and trauma. Another innovative aspect is the strong focus on fathers. We tried our very best to include fathers, and Bowen will discuss some on recruitment and retention and things that we did to involve the fathers. There's a wonderful LA sub-study that we have on fathers, and in the Chicago site, they did a lot with the fathers in terms of the biomarkers. I think each of the sites did everything that they could to include the fathers in the study, and we'll talk a little bit about that and how we tried to recruit them and keep them in the study. But we do have some unique aspects in terms of the data that we were able to collect on dads that really, I think, will help enrich our understanding of health disparities as well. And looking at the relationship quality between the mothers and the fathers. Chris, under her leadership at the LA site and helping for the network, doing a much more in-depth understanding of mother-father relationships through an interview that was developed. Also, we're not going to be able to present those findings today, but we have that available, and I'm looking forward to looking at that as well. And again, another innovative aspect, this being the first NICHD research network using community-based participatory research. Just briefly, in terms of allostatic load, which again is a composite index of the wear and tear of exposure to episodic and chronic stress on the body, and the consequences of that, of allostasis, which is an ongoing set of processes to maintain homeostasis, to regulate your major body systems while adapting to stress. So you kind of talk about getting under your skin, you know, really seeing what's going on there. And it's predictive of disease, morbidity, and death in middle-aged to older-age populations. And looking forward to a lot of what Clarissa can share. The clinical and physiological markers of allostatic load that we obtained included systolic blood pressure, diastolic blood pressure, HPA, immune inflammation indexed by the C-reactive protein, metabolic, looking at body mass index, waist-to-hip ratio, HbA1c, your lipid panel, so we get a lot of different measures of that. Okay, in terms of CCHN, we are a longitudinal study, multi-phase. We got to the place where we are now through a lot of hard work together. Through our phase one, I think many of you and all of us could probably share lots of wonderful stories about getting to the point that we are. Our phase one was really that developmental phase where we were piloting a lot of what we were doing, trying to really figure out working together. How do you have five sites, a DCAC who's at another location all throughout the United States? How do you all work together? You have all your community partners. You have your academic partners. How do we come together through community-based participatory research dealing with some very heavy issues of entrenched maternal and child health disparities research to a way that we can gather solid information that we can feel good about what we're doing. And so we spent a lot of time discussing that. There's a lot of pilot work that we did in terms of how are we going to train our community, how are we going to train our interviewers, how are we going to, what's the community going to feel about when we want to do biomarkers and taking blood samples and having them spit in tubes. You know, how are they going to react to that? What do we need to do? How do we need to make it work well together? And, of course, it brought up a lot of human subjects training issues that we needed to go through, and how could we be culturally sensitive while, you know, we're talking a lot about breastfeeding. There's a lot of different ideas about that and what we wanted to gather as much. Certainly we asked a lot of questions about racism and discrimination, and so how we can gather all of that information together, make our community feel good about what we're doing, and we feel good about what we're doing as well. So that was a wonderful process to go through, and I think we were all the richer for it in terms of our data that we collected. And so then that moved into phase two, in which we, in the end, decided to have the multi-site transdisciplinary prospective longitudinal study of the interpregnancy period, in which we have overrepresentation of low-income African American and Hispanic Latino families, as well as overrepresentation of premature births, so that we can really study families. We enrolled about 2,500 families at the time of birth. I'll give a little bit of the demographics in a minute, but just to give you a sense of how many, we had about 2,510 families at the time of the birth. And we followed them for 24 months, and I'll show you a little bit about the data collection schedule until they have a next pregnancy. And if they had another pregnancy, we would follow that pregnancy as well. Now, this is the broad overview of our conceptual framework for CCHN, and labeled the Preconception Origins of Family Health. It's our model. And essentially what we're looking at here is the top shows the moms, and the dad relates to the bottom is the dads. And in the middle is what you see is how the moms and the dads' supports and stressors relate to their relationship and influencing the interpregnancy interval as well as the biomarkers, and again, one site had the father's biomarkers collected, and then influencing the mom's and the dad's mental health and their parenting, and ultimately influencing the baby's development, and birth, and outcomes. This one deals with what our hypotheses are and the conceptual framework specifically, so how perceived maternal stress influences maternal allostatic load, and then influencing maternal mental health and behavior and birth outcomes, and as you can see, the modifying effect of resilience and support at the institutional, community, environmental, neighborhood levels, and then the direct effects as well of the stress in institutional and community at the top. Some examples of our hypotheses that we developed from our conceptual framework, one being parental stress and resilience influencing maternal allostatic load during the preconception period, so prior to conception. Second, parental stress and resilience being associated with the quality of mother-father relationship and social support, as well as their mental health and parenting. Third, maternal stress and allostatic load in the preconception period influencing prenatal development, including fetal programming of risk for stress-related health conditions. Fourth, community resources and challenges, including racism and discrimination, impacting parental stress, their health care and social service supports, and children's postnatal development. And then again, the focus of the fathers, and that the father's well-being intertwined with and vital to the health of the mothers and children. What this shows you is our timeline for data collection, and what you see in the blue part are indexes, the index child, the child, so it shows when the child was born. We recruited them at the time of birth at most sites and at the hospital. At one site, it was beforehand. We can get into the details of that. But essentially, they were into the study at the time of birth. And then we followed them at 1 month, 6 months, 1 year, 18 months, and 2 years. And then in the yellow underneath that, you can see what we collected from them. So we've got, when we first enrolled them in the study, we did a hospital interview at the time of enrollment. And then we did an interview at 1 month. And then we began the biomarker collection at 6 months and did that at 6 months and 12 months, and then at 2 years. For the subsequent baby, they were enrolled whenever they got pregnant again. So we'd like to say that we could determine when that is, but it happens when it happens. So we had we tried to enroll all who had a subsequent pregnancy, and we began our data collection with a subsequent pregnancy during the second trimester, and we did biomarker collections and interviews at the second trimester, third trimester, and then postpartum with a range of time between 6 and 12 weeks postpartum. This shows you, just as briefly, the study constructs that we have. So we dealt with resilience and social support, stress and stressors within family relationships and home environment, allostatic load, mental and physical health, the prenatal development, birth outcomes, child outcomes, neighborhood, and then their resources. And as you can see, for the most part, we got the majority of them at each time point over time. And Chris will go further into that. In terms of our initial sample at 1 month, we have enrolled 2,510 mothers with a mean age of 25 years. Maternal income, 43% were below the federal poverty level. About a quarter of them were 100 to 200% of the federal poverty level, and about a third of them were over 200% of the federal poverty level. In terms of maternal education, about a fifth of them with less than a high school education, 43% had a high school education or GED, 22% some college, and 14% had a bachelor's or higher. About two-thirds of our mothers were living with the partner or spouse, and we enrolled the dads if they, and loosely called them dads, but so they were either in terms of, or married, so their partner or spouse. So they could be married or they didn't have to be living with them. They were just the father. And then about half of them were first-time mothers. And then maternal depression, about 8% possible, plus about another 8 that were probable depression. In terms of fathers who enrolled, again, Bowen will go more into this in terms of recruitment and retention, but we asked the moms permission first to contact the dads. They gave us the contact information to recruit the dads. So we were able to recruit 1,436 fathers, with about 46% of them African American, 24% white, and 26% Latino. Mean paternal age was a little bit higher, about 30 years of age, and then paternal income about a quarter percent federal poverty level, 18% 200% federal poverty level. As you can see, the paternal education was somewhat similar, and 44% had two or more children. Many potential applications, we believe, of the findings. Again, we'll talk about some here, but one, we believe, is to delineate biological and psychosocial pathways that impact the health and development of subsequent generations, which with today's, all that we know today, and combining with new technologies and new research and new findings, we believe that this can really have a big impact on subsequent generations. Second, a large part of this being that we feel that we can share with communities, clinicians, ways to inform deliberations about improving the preconception status of mothers and fathers, as well as their later health and well-being. And certainly to develop testable preconception programs targeted to reduce and eliminate health disparities. Okay, with my 1 minute left, I certainly would love to recognize all of the wonderful families and those, again, who have been part of this network for the past 9 years now. I feel like I'm giving birth to a sixth child of mine. Not sick, number six. I have five boys. So with thanks and gratitude to many of the families, these are ones from the Chicago site, and thank them for providing this, but the wonderful faces to all of the findings that we have. So this is a very large, don't want to forget to thank anyone, so certainly want to have everybody up there in terms of our acknowledgments. Way we work, we have steering committee calls every 2 weeks. We have chairs, Mark Philippi and Elena Fuentes Aslick. NIH, our program officers, Jeff Evans, Tanse Raju, program scientists, and the DCAC, who are wonderful contributors in terms of helping us keep, we submit our data to them, and they help us put it together and analyze it, headed by PI Vern Chintilly. Our Baltimore site, and thanks to Chris for all of these wonderful pictures for putting these together. And not everyone here is pictured, and I apologize for those that are not, but this is the Baltimore site. And we have Maxine in the house representing Baltimore. The Los Angeles, again, we have Chris here and Bowen and Loretta and Felica, you're here. Hopefully I didn't forget anybody. Who else? So, and then the Lake County, Chicago site, North Carolina, LaToya is here, and the Washington, D.C. site, and that's it. Thank you.